long since then. My name is Walter, and I'm an addict. Always glad to be at an Alcoholics Anonymous addict. No matter what it takes me to get here, I always go through all this crazy stuff in my head before I get to these places, but it seems like once I get here, I'm all right. And I was at the doctor's yesterday, and he was checking my blood pressure. I've been on blood pressure medication for like 5 years. And he said, the lower number is bad. And I said, he said, is there anything different? I said, well, I didn't get to bed last night till 1 o'clock because I was at the Steeler game. And I said, I'm supposed to go to this retreat either later on today or tomorrow. He said, what's that for? I mean, he knows I'm in a 12-step program. But that probably explains the low number being high, because I knew when I got it, they were asking me to speak. They kept telling me I was going to speak, but I didn't know when I was coming. But I told him that, and he said, whatever, we're going to take care of it. I said, okay. But it's always a privilege and an honor to speak at any type of NA meeting, Asian, can get anywhere. I mean, it's always an honor. I'd like to thank whoever asked me. And when I have a topic to speak on, I don't want a topic. If I don't have a topic, I want a topic. That's how I am. I've been like that all my life. But attitudes and behaviors are something, you know, when you first get clean, I was thinking about that on the ride up here, and I never in my wildest dreams, when I first started coming to NA meetings, think that I would be in the lower mountains at a spiritual retreat speaking. I mean, that was just like the furthest thing from my mind. I don't know what the closest thing was, but I knew this was the furthest thing from my mind. And, of course, I ain't no different than anybody else. I am, in my behaviors, and that is influenced by what I'm around. I come from a large family. I have 5 brothers and 2 sisters, and I'm from the city of Pittsburgh, and, I was one of them guys that couldn't follow no rules and regulations. I got a 16-year-old son that's taking me through all that right now. His mother just told me after the end of the summer how many he's been arrested 3 times this summer. After he went on all his vacations, got everything he was supposed to get, then she tells me. He was in Alaska when she told me. I ain't never put my hands on my son. And she always thinks that I'm going to beat him because we ain't together, and I've never beat him. But he's given me a first-hand look at me. And the fact of the matter is, he's so much further ahead of the game than I was. When I was 16, I was strung out in a youth development center and out already. He ain't even there yet, but he's knocking on the door. And you couldn't tell me anything. You couldn't show me anything. I had 2 wonderful parents that tried. I mean, they absolutely tried their best. And I was going to do what I was going to do no matter what. You could put me wherever you wanted to put me, whoever you wanted to put me with, and it didn't matter. And when you live like that, you got to pay the consequences. So, as a result of living like that and using drugs up until I was there, I didn't get clean until I was 39 years old. I was in and out of institutions and youth development centers, and I couldn't wait till I turned 18 so I could go to county jail and get out on bail. I thought if you could pay and get out. And then when I got arrested and got on bail, I thought the case was over with. I didn't know that you had to go eventually and see the judge. So I would end up being out on 13 bails, and the last time I got arrested, they wouldn't let me out. I like to sell dope. I didn't like to work. You know, I started selling dope when I was 16 years old, and when I turned 20 years old, I had about, I don't know how many different cases I had, but I was in a county jail with all of my heroes. That's where all my heroes were at that time, in the county jail, so that tells you a lot about me. For all your heroes in the county jail, you're in bad shape. And they said, oh, you're a little young kid, white kid. They ain't going to do nothing to you when you go see the judge. I believed them. You know, and of course, when I wasn't seeing a judge, I got so sick and tired of him telling me no more than and no less than. I ended up doing 5 years at that time. That's where I met Schmitty at. And, you know, they put me, you know, I have a good friend, he's 66 years old, and he did 19 months in a federal prison, and we always talk about, I've never heard anybody say, I can't wait to get a prison sentence so I could do it. You know, everybody says the same thing, I couldn't do that, I would kill myself. But what you find out, what I have found out since I got clean is how adaptable I really am. You know, I went there and, you know, I'm pretty good at making the best of a bad situation. And I did that 5 years and came home when I was about 25 years old. And it never crossed my mind that using drugs was a problem. I always thought that it was society and my parents and my neighborhood and the police and undercover agents. That was kind of like my life story, that attitude and them behaviors. Just, you know, I could never get that together until I got clean. I got out of penitentiary, went for 12 years, and I was always in jail for selling dope. The last time I was in jail, I sold an undercover agent 16 bags of cream oil on Halloween. So I say that to say that's where I went. I went from selling heroin to selling cream oil. That's what they should do to me. But I ended up doing 3 years that time. And that time when I had been in county jail, I had abscesses all up and down my body. These stockings here in a new style. I need these to get the blood from back up from my feet when it goes down there from using all the drugs in my feet and growing the legs. And these behaviors, they never changed, never. I mean, from when I was a young kid, everybody would say, you have to change, and nobody never told me how. So when I go to prison this time, I was rescued. I used to not like that word, but, you know, they definitely rescued from me, and I used to not realize that when they say rescued, I was rescued from me. So, I go in this jail and I couldn't do anything. The only thing I could associate with is drugs, because I started using cocaine with heroin, and that cocaine is, I mean, it completely finished me. Thank God for cocaine. So I'm down in county jail, and these guys are smuggling drugs in, and I'm right there with them, and I couldn't wait to get back down to penitentiary, and I didn't think they was going to put me there, but they did. And I was in this cell with my younger brother ended up in a cell next to me. And we was up there doing the same thing, smuggling drugs. Our brothers, we call our brothers up, they would bring the drugs to us or send them to us some kind of way. And I ain't exactly sure at what point that I started to pray when I was in prison. And I mean, I wasn't, you know, wouldn't get down on my knees and pray in front of anybody. I didn't have what it takes to do that. But I started laying in bed at night and in the morning, and eventually before you go home, they moved me into a big trailer, a module, and there's like 80 people around you all the time. But I would lay in bed at night and I would say, in the morning I'd say, God help me to take care of my family and all that. And I had no idea why I started to do that or never ever would pay attention to no results. Anything that happened, I always thought that I did that. You know, my attitudes were always, you know, God was, my older brother and older sister went to Catholic school and I didn't want nothing to do with it. I ended up going to a public school. And, but I'm praying every day and every night and we're smuggling these drugs and we get these drugs and we're in this cell. And, we used these drugs, and by this point, I started to snort them. For some reason, I just wouldn't use them either, you know. All of a sudden, after like close to 30 years of using anybody's needle anytime, anywhere, this was some of the subtle changes that when I look back on them, that I've seen happening. You know, I couldn't see it when it was happening, but I seen it in retrospect. So So we're in this cell. We go through all these things. We get these drugs in the jail, and we use them. And I had what they call in our text a profound spiritual experience when I used these drugs. My whole life flashed in front of me. I knew exactly why I was in that cell. I knew exactly why my brother was in the cell next to me. He was standing right there. We were using the drugs together. And it scared me like I ain't never been scared in my life. I mean, I knew something happened. I had no idea what it was. I would have never attributed that it had anything to do with prayer. That's for sure. I would have never thought that. But I wanted my brother out of the cell. I said, you better get out of the cell before the guard comes. I lay down on the bed and I say, I know something just happened, but what happened? You know, and of course, I wasn't the type of guy that would share anything like that with you. I'm still walking around this penitentiary talking this much shit, acting a goddamn fool. Telling them when I get out of here, I'm going to tell the poor people to kiss my ass. I'm going to get some dope and coke and all that. That attitude, you know, them behavior, that's all I knew. That's all I had. That's all I ever learned from being in the streets all the time. So I go off in front of the pole, man, and, you know, you're sitting kind of across from a desk. I'm sitting here, and he's sitting there, and by this time, my record is pretty fat, pretty thick, you know, and he's, you know, he's looking across, and he's going through my record, and he says, you know, with people like you, I'll always have a job. I thought to myself, I said, this sounds like an insult. but because of this experience in that cell, I just sat there and I looked him in his eye and I said, there's only one thing that I want to ask of you. Whatever you could do for me to go home, just do that. And he's looking at my record on. He said, if you don't live in a certain zip code, you can't go home. I said, say that again. He said, if you don't live in a certain zip code, you can't go home. I said, I never heard that one. Many times I've been in jail and got out, that's a new one. I said, what does that mean? He said, that means if you don't live in a certain zip code, you're not going home. I said, what's the certain zip code? He said, well, we started a, it's called the East End High Intensity Supervision Drug Unit, and if you can't parole there, you can't parole. I said, well, let me tell you my zip code and see if I can parole. I tell him my zip code. He said, you're good, you're real close to it. I said, okay. So, he said, I'm going to do what I can do. He said, but if you don't have a needle somewhere in your body within the first 24 hours of your release, it'll be an act of God. I said, just do what you can do for that to happen. Now, I knew from that experience in that cell that I had to stop using drugs, but I didn't have a clue how. I didn't know who to ask. I didn't know where to go. One of my co-defendants on one of my last cases got clean. And he come to visit me, and me and him had a case for burning Asian, and me and my son's mother had a case for taking this guy's money. She went to Muncie, and I went to the Western. We went together. But she had got home, was home before me, and she come to see him with my son's mother, this guy, my son, and my mother come to see me. This guy sat there joining me, and he started visiting and said, I got clean. I've been clean for 6 months. I just thought that was a great idea for him. You know, he left. I went back in the jail, and I can honestly tell you I was not impressed with anything he said. He said he was going to NA meetings and all that, and I thought that was a good idea for him because I had been to NA meetings before. And I thought it was a wonderful idea for everybody in that room, but I didn't think it applied to me. I just didn't think I needed it. So I go see the poor people, and they let me come home. I came home February 21st, 1991, the last night. And this guy who had got clean come to my house. And this is the guy that used to, he wanted to take me to an NA meeting that day. Here's what I told him. Here comes your behavior and attitude. I said, I got things to do, places to go, and people to see. I just did 2 years. Where am I going? I said, I ain't going to one of them meetings today. I said, maybe tomorrow. Now, this is the guy that used to, me and him been on every methadone program in the city, and he always had a car. I never had a car. I never even had a license. And he used to pick me up and take me to the program every day, and then we would get out. And he used to pull in front of my house and blow the horn. So he pulls up in front of my house and blows the horn the next morning. Now, in my mother's house, between the time he left me off and the time that he come back here to blow the horn. Everybody in my house used drugs. The only person you get a clean urine off of my house is a dog. That's if nobody gave them nothing. And I was up there all day, all night fighting with them. You can't do this, you can't do that. My son's mother was there, strung out so bad. But I did not use drugs from that about 18-hour period. I hear a horn blow, and I look out the window, and here he is. And my heart started to beat. And you can see my heart beating through my shirt. And I did what I always did. It's funny how that happens. I said, wait 1 minute. I went and got dressed. Go get in this car, and he takes me to a Narcotics Anonymous meeting. I walk in this Narcotics Anonymous meeting. When I go to the meeting, people outside, they started to hug me. And when a guy would hug me, man, I would want to vomit. I swear, my stomach would just be turning so bad. You know, that's them attitudes and, you know, they just, it's what happens to us out there in that game, man. It speaks what it does to our perception and our mind and what we think and what we believe. So every time a girl hugged me, I said, yeah, okay, this is nice here. But I didn't want no guys hugging me. But I went along with the program. Simply because of that, what I know today, because of that experience in that cell. So I'm thinking in my mind like I always thought. I'm going to figure this out some kind of way, and I'll be all right. I never asked anybody about it. I looked, just in 2 years, I had my health back. I had some new clothes when I was clean. You know, people were hugging me. So I said, when this meeting starts, I said, soon as I find out the secret, I'm going to be gone. So this guy who became my sponsor, I know him since I was a little kid. He starts talking about not using no drugs just today. I said, there it is, right there. There's the secret. I said, I've been clean 90 days today. That was my 90th day clean. And when they started doing clean time, this girl was sitting there with me. She said, how long you been clean? And I figured it out. Last time I used was November 22nd. This was February 26th, so it was 90 days. He said, you're going to get a key tag? I said, yeah, don't worry about it. I'm going to get one. I thought you filled out a form and mailed it in, and they sent you one. Nobody never told me that. That's the kind of ideas and behaviors and what I thought, my attitudes. So when it comes time to go get it, I was like, I don't want to go up there and do that. But I did it. And I got up, and I went up there, and people were clapping and all that. And what we have when we come here is not too much. You know, all I had was this experience in that cell. What I come to find out, it took me about 3 months of steady going to meetings to realize what exactly had happened in that cell. And then it took me, I don't know how much longer after that, to find out that what has changed my behavior and consequences. I haven't used no drug in 12 years and 9 months and 1 day today. And it's only as a result of coming here and these people that literally loved me back to the point where my life means something to me. My life today, there's a line in our text that says, our life becomes so much unlike the events that brought us here. That's what happened to me. I never worked. I never had a driver's license. I never knew that I didn't even like myself. I never knew that. It probably took me about a good 3 or 4 years to get that together, that I always thought that it was you was the problem, not me. And through doing a 4-step and, you know, my first sponsor, God bless his soul, he got me involved in H&I. I went from doing time to, I go down to Western Penitentiary every Friday night and do the NA meeting. And I sit there with guys that I done everything imaginable with, and they're there and I'm here. And they think they helped me. That's the funny thing about it. Or they think I'm helping them. They don't even know that they're helping me. But my behaviors and my attitudes today are just so much different. You know, because of coming here and getting a sponsor and working the steps and praying and going to meetings and going to H&I, and I couldn't imagine my life any other way than it is right now. When I used to go to meetings in the beginning, I would be sitting in discussion meetings and say, if they would let me get my license, I could get a job. So one time after the meeting, this girl says to me, I've known a long time, she said, well, did you ever go? She said, I didn't have a license, and I went down to the state representative's office. When she said it, I cringed. I said, the state representative's office? Why would I go there? He ain't going to do nothing for me, is what I thought. So she said, try it. So I go down there, and I ask the guy, tell him, give him all my information. He said, let me call Harrisburg, and I'll tell you what's going to happen. He picks up the phone, and I said, I'm sitting there thinking, they ain't going to give me my license. He gets a phone call back and hangs up the phone. And he goes, Mr. Schaefer, come here. He says, you got to do the same thing that everybody else that got a license did. That's what you got to do. That was the first time in my life, now I'm almost 40 years old, where it was absolutely on me to do what I had to do to get what I wanted. And I went and did it, and the day I got my license, my sponsor gave me this truck, and since then I have two of my own businesses. My life is so peaceful. It's being up at 1 o'clock in the morning, that's why I was at the Steelers game where I'd have been sleeping. You know, I'm sleeping at 10 o'clock. I really live and enjoy my life to the fullest, and I owe it all to Narcotics Anonymous, and I hope I never forget that. I want to thank you for listening. Have a good day.
I would like to introduce our second speaker, Randy, your home group.
Yeah, I got one.
You got one? Would you like to tell us what it is?
All right, my name's Randy.
Hey, Randy.
My home group is Circle of Hope meeting on Thursday morning and Thursday night at 8 p.m. in Timonee, Maryland. If you ever come through town, give me a call and I'll take you to my home group. One of the first lines in the basic text I ever memorized and kept to heart, because I was told that if I remembered this line, that I probably wouldn't use. And it said, the same person would use again. And what that told me was that if I was going to remain an active member of Narcotics Anonymous, I was going to have to address every issue that made me come through the doors for the first time. Mm-hmm. And that meant that I had to be willing to take a look not only at where I was and who I was hanging with, but how I got to be there in the first place. If I need to qualify, the reality of it was I shot dope for over 20 years. And that's what I did on a regular basis. And I did whatever I had to do to get the dope to shoot on a regular basis. And some of the stuff was really shame-based type stuff. It involved sexual activity, involved criminal activity. And the reality of it is, as much as it's my background, I can't change what occurred. You know, God, in His grace, decided to put a fourth step so we could come to grips with stuff like that. But, you know, the workshop is on our attitudes and behaviors. And what it says that we do recover in the last sentence is recovery is an active change of attitudes and ideas. And what that means is if I put a profound effect on how I think, it'll affect how I act. Okay? And I got to be willing to do that. Because how many of you ever heard that thing, are you willing to do whatever it takes for your recovery? Did you think they were bullshitting? I mean, they weren't giving you lip service. They were asking you, what was your commitment to this? You know, when somebody asks me to be their sponsor, I feel honored, but I ask them, what's your commitment? What are you going to give me? Because I'm going to give you everything that I got, so what are you giving me? And to be willing to take direction, like I was. See, because you have to understand something. Here's what I came into Narcotics Anonymous with. When I was 8 years old, I was institutionalized in a place called Spring Grove State Hospital in Maryland. It's a state mental institution. At 8 years old, I had a nervous breakdown because my parents got divorced. And in open court back then, my father said if my youngest son had been a girl, our marriage would have been successful. Well, I was the youngest son. And I took that pretty hard that I had broken up my family. And what happened was I went into a semi-catonic state, and all their glory would happen. This is the greatest thing. I had the most valuable message that the judge ever gave was, he said, 30 days, observation only. The 30 days ended up in a 36-year run. And what happened was, is 14 days into that 30 days observation only, two men came into my room and mistook me for a woman. And they raped me three times over 2 days. Narcotics Anonymous has given me the ability to stand here and to be able to share this with you because you can't harm me with it. You can't. But what happened was, is in my first NA meeting, They asked if I wanted to share. It was about 5 minutes in this meeting, and I said no. And I came back, and they said, keep coming back. And I said, maybe. And the next week, I went in there. And see, my daughter had doped me to my first meeting because she had 60 days clean and had started this meeting on the west side of Baltimore called Nothing's Constant But Change, which is still there to this day. And I'm sitting in this meeting the second week in a row supporting my daughter. When they said, Mr., because I look old enough to be everybody's father, would you like to share? And I said, no. And the next thing I knew is that I was in a fetal position on the ground screaming that I wanted to die. And these men got out of their chair and they got down on the ground with me and put their arms around me. And I broke one of their noses. Because, see, I came into Narcotics Anonymous with that 8-year-old little boy who had been sexually abused. Okay, and my attitudes were is that no man would ever put his hand on me, ever again. So you can imagine how much of an anguish I was in when at the end of the meeting it said, okay, we're going to get in a circle and put our arms around each other. I used to hyperventilate in an open meeting. I said, what do you mean? Can't we just shake hands? And what happened was, is some people will tell you that they came back to their second Narcotics Anonymous meeting because they heard some incredible message in the first one they went to. I'm here to tell you that I went back to my second Narcotics Anonymous meeting because I liked the way the heart felt. Because I had become unlovable as a result of my active addiction. And even in the way I smelled and the way I looked and the actions that I took and the stature, because as men, we'd come into NA and I've seen it this weekend. You know, the puffed out chest, and I'm bad. You ain't bad. You're an addict. That's all you are. And eventually, when you come to the understanding of the first step about where an addict really is, that chest gets deflated and gets filled with even something even worse, which is total misinformation. Okay? But here we come in here, and it's attitudes and ideas. I'm coming into Narcotics Anonymous having based my whole life of dealing with you guys on what I thought was correct and healthy. Okay? Now, I believe in group participation, so if I kick a feeling, please let me know. That's the only way I know that I'm taking the message that God wants me giving it to. Because I won't remember a damn thing I say here tonight, but hopefully you will. And I'm sure some of you will get an action behind it and feel the need to share it with me. I'm a guest, leave me the fuck alone. So I came to Narcotics Anonymous. Okay? And I had no clue what the hell I was doing here. We've got to work the steps. Fuck the steps. How do you stop putting a needle in your body one day at a time? Tell me how to do that. And of course, I was hard-headed. Because we seek the path of least resistance. You take a drop of water and put it in a pile of dirt and watch it. It goes until it gets to the bottom, and that's what we do. We want to follow the path of least resistance. We don't want to do the work it takes to get to the end, but we want the end result. Okay? And my thing is, and that's that attitude of self-centeredness. That don't you know who I am? And I deserve this. I'm clean now, so I have to get everything. I'm going to clue you in. Bad things happen to people in recovery who are clean. The difference between us and them is they don't see dope when it happens, and we do. So for here, we learn how not to do that kind of stuff. Because I can tell you, if you stay here long enough, okay, if you're smart enough to listen to tonight's speaker, who I know personally, you will find out the storms will come. And you will find out how strong your foundation is and how willing you are to walk through the thing you fear the most. And to walk through the thing you fear the most is, you know what it is? And it's the same for everybody. This is what I love about this program. The fear that you have the most especially when you're new, is that you are going to see me the way I see me. So the first attitude that's got to change is what I see when I look in the mirror. Because if I don't learn to love that image that's staring back at me, I will never let you love the image that you see. And the process, that process for me started when I finally figured out I wasn't defective. I'm not defective, folks. I don't know about you. I hate the term I hear when people say, earth people. Let me clue you in. I'm earth, okay? When we start using terms like NA Nazi and alien people and earth people, we set ourselves aside as being different, and we're not. We got a disease that gets treated one day at a time by not using, calling our sponsor, praying, and working steps. That's how this works. There's a blueprint itself in the first step that tells you exactly how this works, yet we want to mind fuck this thing to the best of our ability. Well, it can't be that simple.
It is. Don't pick up. That's literally how simple this is. If you just don't pick up, you will receive blessings beyond your wildest dreams. I promise you. If you do work, I can't even tell you what that is. But I can tell you for me. Well, excuse me. For me, the active change of attitudes and ideas took place when my level of pain got higher than my level of fear. Okay, and that happened with 38 days clean. The desire to use was physically lifted. I did not wake up and want to shoot dope for 38 days clean. And I sat in a chair and said, wow, this is great. And in the same breath, it was the scariest moment of my entire life. Because then the reality hit. But you know something? Yeah, in the beginning, this was about not using, but it goes way beyond that. You know, because see, I know people that are clean, that are abstinent, and absolutely miserable, because the only thing they've done is stop using. And eventually, they pick up weight teachings, because you can't stay around here and just be abstinent. You can't do it. Because life continues to go on, and you're still here. So if you could keep picking up white keychain after white keychain, eventually you'll have enough for a belt and maybe a vest. And if you don't die or commit suicide, maybe, just maybe, it'll come clear to you, okay, that your best efforts don't work. That was the first attitude adjustment that I got. Despite my best efforts, nothing I did worked. And I needed to find something other than me to take direction from. You know? And at first, what that was the people that I shot dope with who were here when I got here. And I saw the difference in their lives, and I said, you know something? Something's happened. I'm not sure what it is, but I need to ask them what happened. So asking for help was the first attitude adjustment that I had, that I obtained. Because we are incredible people in Narcotics Anonymous, and you should give yourself a hand. We are incredible, incredible people. But the one skill none of us have ever been able to master is to be able to read minds. So unless you raise your hand and say, here's where I am, please help me, no one in this fellowship can reach out and touch you in a place where they've already walked. So if you're in this and you're new in recovery and you're not sure if you belong, okay, just raise your hand and ask somebody. Okay. Here's the riddle part. How can you tell an addict when it's 100 degrees out? Who shoots up? Long sleeve. Because see, if you don't think you're ashamed of what you're doing, I knew what I was doing every day. This couldn't stop. And I was, you know, I was the guy who said, you know something, this morning, this is John, who's my sponsor, I love him. This morning, I ain't using today. We've all done this, right? Not today. Today is the first day that I'm not using. Until about a half an hour later, you've sold the toaster, and you're going to Costco. Because the nature of the disease is, despite my best efforts, it wins every time. I can't win. You know, just like the gambler will tell you, I can go on a run in Las Vegas and win some money, but in the long run, the casino owns me. The drug owns you. You can't go nowhere. There's nowhere to run. You can move and it follows and comes with you. Okay, so here you are clean. Still acting stupid. Still lying. Yeah? Still telling the girls in recovery, yeah, I'm a doctor. Because God, for men, live by the two-head theory, don't we, guys? God gave you two heads to think with. Which one you choose will normally dictate the outcome. Oh, you like to play with that, huh? Can I ask a question? I've been dying, and you guys can help me. What page of it in the basic text does it say stay out of relationships in the first year? Last night I was looking. What page is that, Walt? What do you know? Come on, he's doing this. What? No, seriously, what page is it on? It's not in there? Here's my theory. I think the men that could not get laid in early recovery made that shit up. Because I can see them all in the room going, you know something? If I ain't getting it, nobody's getting it. Change of attitudes and ideas. Guys, this is where I'm going to piss you off, and you won't talk to me the rest of the weekend, but I don't really give a shit. But I'm going to tell you the truth as I know it. When you see the new coming girl walk into the room and you know who she is, do me a favor, leave the fuck alone. You are not the answer to her problems. You're not. And we have a problem. And I don't blame you for doing what you do. Because you're imperfect. Okay? You're going to make mistakes. We're human beings. We want to be loved. We want to be thought that we're attractive and sexy, and we want to be all those things. There's nothing wrong with that in time. Yeah, but in time, you'll change. In time, you'll be healthy to have relationships like that. I think the reason why they tell you to wait a year is, do you really, remember how toxic you were when you had 6 months clean? Do you really want to bring that to somebody else's life? The first time you make a decision not to do something like that is the first time that the disease takes the first major hit in your recovery. Because for the first time, you got out of self and thought about the needs of someone else. Wow. Active change of ideas and attitudes. Because when you change how you think, you change how you act.
I'm telling about the newcomer guy.
Okay. I love the newcomer, Alexander. You know that. I wouldn't be clean for the newcomer. I'm going to tell you, active change. Here's the most valuable lesson I ever got in Narcotics Anonymous, came from somebody with 28 days clean. Mm-hmm. At the end of the meeting, I was going through some times, and I asked if the members of NA would pray for me because I was facing major surgery. And he came up to me, and this was humbling. He said, Mr. Randy at Mr. The old Catholic school neighborhood, yeah, Mr. Randy, Mr. Bob. Mr. Rainey says, you don't have to do that. And I said, what the fuck do you know, Einstein? Come on, talk, bring it to me. He says, well, you know, at the end of the meeting where it says a moment of silence for the addict who still suffers, he says, that's for you. That's what you're talking about. He says, you don't have to be using to be suffering. You have to be willing to participate. Isn't that cool? He said, you can eat. You don't have to use to be suffering. You just have to be participating in your own life. And that's what comes along. That's, you know, so you get the freedom from active addiction. I got the freedom to participate in my own life. I get the freedom to grieve. I get the freedom to express joy. Those are all active changes of attitudes and ideas. 2 years ago, I got a call from my father's doctor. And he said, Randy? He said, yeah. He said, your father's dying. And me and my father never had a close relationship. And I said, well, what do you want me to do about it? I'm not God. I can't take away his sickness. He says he needs somebody to step forward and to be his voice. Because some things are going to start happening in his life that he's going to require somebody to step forward and be his caretaker. He says, and your two older brothers won't do it. They say they emotionally are not capable. But they said, because you're in a 12-step program, they thought maybe you could do it. I said, I probably could, but what if I don't want to? Because I hate this son of a bitch. I said, he put me in a nut house. He's never told me that he loved me. He's never been proud of anything I've ever done. He's pissed me off at every turn. And now you want me to step forward and walk through the end of his life with him? Sure, I'll do it. He says, why the change of heart? He says, because one day that's going to be me. And I can't perpetuate that kind of behavior. And the first time I went to see this old man, he was in a nursing home, and I left on was smiling. And the third day I went to see him, I was in tears because he was falling apart. And the seventh day that I went to see him, he told me that he loved me for the first time in his life. And the eighth day he told me that he was proud of me. And on the tenth day I held his hand and he took his last breath. The storms, they will come, and if you don't have an active change in how you look at the world, they will take you out the door. I promise you. But what I learned about my father that changed my whole opinion of him was when they laid his stone at the veteran's funeral, the caretaker was standing over his stone, and he was fluting. He had tears running down his eyes. And he says, and I said, why are you crying? He said, don't you see that designation on your father's stone? I said, what's that? He said, if you don't know, I can't tell you, but go to the office. And I go to the office, and they said there's a four-letter thing on there. What is that? He said, you don't know? I said, no, I don't fucking know. How many people are going to ask me this? He said, well, we have to call the Department of Navy to let you know. 2 days later, I come up, and this guy's in a stark white uniform, and he says, you, Mr. Charlestein? Oh, yeah, I can tell you, my last name is Randy. First name is Randy. My last name is Charlestein because the statute of limitation has run on everything I've done, so you can't hardly know my name. He says, your father is one of only 10 men in the United States Navy during the Second World War that received the Congressional Medal of Honor. I said, what? In 80 years in the earth, he never mentioned it to anyone. He was wounded 3 times. At Guadalcanal, landing U.S. Marines into the woods rather than on the beach. And on the landing amphibious ship, the only person you can see is the person driving. And that was my dad. But that's not the thing that changed my mind about him. What changed my mind about him is that at his funeral there was over 500 people there. Vernon was there. And people came up and stared about my dad. But what I found out was perfect strangers came up to me and said, "Did you know your father used to send me a birthday card?" I said, "Did he know you real well?" He said, "No, but he said everybody should receive a card on their birthday." What? And when I was cleaning out his bedroom after the funeral, there was a calendar there and had over 400 people's names, addresses, phone numbers, birth dates, anniversary dates, their children's names, and their children's birthdays. And every day he would send out anywhere from 5 to 10 cards to these people so that that child or that adult or that widow got a birthday card on their birthday. All my life, all I wanted to do was denigrate this man, and in the end, I found out he's the person I've always wanted to be my entire life. Somebody who cared unconditionally. So he taught me that, you know something? It's not about me. My needs have always been met by you guys. So I can spend all this time in Narcotics Anonymous trying to meet the needs of others. You know, that's why when you're asked to be of service, you do it without question. You don't question why. Service is, his act about, oh, service is great. No, service is inconvenient. Let's get it right. It's inconvenient, isn't it? But we still do it, don't we? Why? Because our primary purpose is we've got to continue to carry the message. That's why you come here. Because, you know, there might be a bunch of you said, you know, this fucking guy is full of shit. But one of you guys might walk away here today being able to look at your father in a different light. And if that's true, then God's will has been done here. Because it's about us doing what? An active change of attitudes and ideas. That's what it's about. You know? And people ask me, where did you learn how to do this? I'd like to tell you that my sponsor taught me how to do this. He didn't. I'd like to tell you that the steps taught me how to do this. But to be honest with you, they didn't. Here's what I tell you he did it. He had four legs instead of two. His name was Ming Ming. He was a Pekingese. I got him the second day after I was married. And I had him 16 years. And he developed cancer of his palate, which is inoperable, and the doctor said we need to give him relief. And I went to the doctor, and I said, okay, I'm willing to do that. And they put the IV in him, and I started, I said, no, please don't go. Because he was my dog. And he looked up, and he licked me on the face, and he died. He taught me how to love. Not a human being. See that? You look, yeah, all this week long, I've been watching how this dog is with that's what I learned. I learned that I can shed tears in front of you and it's not a big deal. You're not going to judge me. I know you won't. Because your day is going to come. If you don't learn that what's inside here has to come out in some form or another, you're lost. You know? Because there's that little boy inside of you that all, when you were a little kid just wants to be loved. Or the little girl. You know? And eventually if you stay around here long enough, you've got to change how you see the world. Because my old stuff poisoned me. It poisoned me. I hope, the biggest thing I hope is that Jen got a message today. That's what I hope. She's the newcomer. You old timers need you. She hopefully got this shit by now. And if you didn't, I hope you got something today. But these newcomers who are the future of Narcotics Anonymous, you know, they need to get the message that it's okay to shed tears, it's okay to change how I see the world, it's okay to walk through pain, because it's coming. It's coming. I promise you, if you stay here long enough and you participate in your own life, your parents are going to pass away, your children are going to move out, you're going to lose jobs, you're going to have medical issues that are going to bring you to your knees. I shot dope, and here's what I want to end with. When I was 42 years old, I developed an arthritis that's rather rare, and what it's done is it's basically crippled my right hand. And they came out with a new medicine called Enbrel. And the only way you can use it is to self-inject it. So Thursday, I had to go to the rheumatologist and put a needle voluntarily in my body for the first time in 17 years. And she said, "Have you ever done this before?" I said, "No, no, ma'am." And I put the syringe in the little bottle of the medicine and put the saline solution in and switched it around. I said, "Fuck, this is like cold sick and Demerol." And without her telling me, I picked it up and pulled it out. She said, "You ever done this?" I said, "No, ma'am." And then I hit the needle. She said, "You've done this shit." And I said,
a couple times. He says, have you ever skin popped? No, ma'am. I said, do you have a room where I can sit? She said, why? I said, because I really don't want to cry in front of you in your waiting room. Said, the emotionality of it hit me. And what I had to do is I called my sponsor and he said, Randy, check your motive. Are you doing this? Do you have a higher power telling you? I said, yeah, this doctor told me that this is a miracle drug and I might regain use of my right hand fully if I do this. So now I've got to self-inject myself twice a week for the rest of my life. And I've got feelings behind having to use, you know, a set of works. And there's the first problem, right there. Attitudes and ideas. I just called it a set of works instead of calling it a syringe. An old dog can still learn new tricks, you know. This last year was the first year that I missed this retreat. And I missed it, and it hurt me because people that I care about come here and I only get to see them. But, you know, if you're here and you're clean, you know, and you're crazy, you know, that's a blessing. If you took a breath this morning, that's a blessing. You know, the half full, half empty attitude, you know. Just don't use today, guys. That's all you got to do is don't use, because then you at least bring yourself another chance that tomorrow when you wake up, you'll commit yourself to changing your active change of the attitudes and ideas. I'm an addict named Randy. Thanks.
Nothing. Well, I would like to thank the speakers for sharing their experience, strength, and hope with us. Could we have the reading of Just for Today, please?
My name's Mike, and I'm an addict.
Tell yourself, just for today, my thoughts would be on my recovery, living and enjoying life without the use of drugs. Just for today, I will have faith in someone in NA who believes in me and wants to help me in my recovery. Just for today, I will have a program. I will try to follow it to the best of my ability. Just for today, through NA, I will try to get a better perspective on my life. Just for today, I will be unafraid. My thoughts will be on my new association, people who are not using and who have found a new way of life. So long as I follow that way, I have nothing to fear.
Thanks, Mike. We have a nice way of closing. Can we please form a circle and close with the we version of serenity prayer? Randy, since you're up there, can you take us out, please?
Sure. Put your right foot in the right.
God, grant us serenity to accept the things we cannot change, the courage to change the things we can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Amen.
Bernie, what's happening? How you doing, man?
Brother,
I'm good, man. You're all good. How do you do? Listen to someone speak my attitude and behavior, you know?
Good.